This leads on the bad side, on the inferior side of Oriental art, to a rather dry academic repetition, a sort of recurrence of stereotypes. I don't want to speak about the negative side of the subject. What I want to speak about is the wonderful mystery and technique for the rendering of the immortal in all things. The wonderful song that one hears when one reads the Bhagavad Gita or any of the great texts of Oriental philosophy. This song of that immortal spirit that never was born and never dies, but is born in all things, lives in all things, and dies in all things, and the radiance of which gives things their glory. This is the song that is sung in Indian art itself, and in Oriental art in general. And it's of that that I want to speak somewhat this evening. The Oriental artist, the Indian artist, let me say to start with, I shall move later to the Far Eastern scene, is a sort of yogi. After he has learned the physical techniques, the manual techniques of his craft, after he has performed the assignments assigned to him by his master and done the craftsmanly work that was his to do, and becomes now himself a master craftsman, and receives the commission to erect the temple or to design the sculptural decor, which will then be executed by his craftsman, he must meditate in order to bring before his own spirit, his own inner eye, the vision of the deity whom he is to render. It's wonderful to read of the origins of many Oriental temples, even of many Oriental cities, how a great monarch, a holy monarch, had a dream, a vision, and in this he saw the city. And I think that this is why, when one goes to some of these great Oriental cities, even today, one feels that one is moving in a dream world. The city is dreamlike in its conception, and very frequently was actually conceived in a dream, and then this dream rendered as far as possible in stone and brick. The artist proposing to depict a certain divinity, let us say Vishnu, must first study all the texts, and he knows them already from his apprenticeship, to learn what precisely the signs of this deity are, what the traits of this deity are. And then he must compose his mind and pronounce in his spirit the deity's seed syllable. That is to say, he must pronounce the sound, which is the verbal counterpart of the deity's image. And then, if he has the fortune to receive the grace of the god's manifestation, the deity will appear in his mind, in his radiant form, and this, then, is the model. That is to say, at their best, the works of Indian art in the great period are renditions, literal renditions of visions, and they have this visionary, dreamlike quality, as well as a wonderful vigor and power in physical strength.